You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create change in the world every day. Keep listening for actionable tips and tricks to incorporate eco-friendly practices into your daily life.
We've been featured by Apple as the number one podcast for conscious consumers, and we can't wait to welcome you into our community of changemakers. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Laura. We're the founders of Brightly.eco, the new platform for conscious consumers. We believe in supporting all creatures, great and small.
And our team of experts show you how to live and shop responsibly by sharing world-changing lifestyle ideas, products, and more. To read show notes from Good Together and to browse all of the planet-friendly goodness that we feature, head to brightly.eco/podcast.
And to help spread the word about the podcast, tap on this episode and share Good Together with your friends and family. A simple text message helps us grow and create change around the world.
This episode is brought to you by Sheets and Giggles. Laura, you've probably heard me talk all the time about my love for Sheets and Giggles. I've been sleeping on their new sustainable eucalyptus sheets for the past 8 months straight. I recommend them 1000%. Every week I wash them and put them back on the bed right away. They're my go-to sheets. All of my other sheets, even the ethical ones, are taking a long break.
After hearing you rave about them for so long, Lisa, I finally got a chance to try their new eucalyptus comforter. So I'm a weirdo. I really like having a comforter on my bed all the time, even when we have the heat blasting. I haven't woken up once hot while I was using this one from Sheets and Giggles. It's a great ethical and sustainable alternative to the down comforter we used to use that's now sitting on our guest bed. Another thing I love about Sheets and Giggles is that they don't use plastic packaging and the materials don't use pesticides, so they're kind to our animal and insect friends.
They also plant a tree for each sheet set that is sold, and they're passionate about giving back. They give 10% off to customers who donate their old sheets to homeless shelters, and they have donated over $40,000 to Colorado COVID relief.
Good Together listeners get 15% off by using the code BRIGHTLYECO at SheetsGiggles.com.
This year, we all have been stuck in our homes a little more than usual due to the seemingly never-ending pandemic. Now the holiday season is upon us in full swing. We all have just had probably the most weird Thanksgiving ever, not being able to be with our loved ones and friends, having to share the main meal of the year via Zoom, especially now that we all have upped our cooking skills. Talking about cooking, it has been by far my favorite pandemic distraction / self-care act, and just something I have started to enjoy deeply. The more difficult and adventurous a recipe is, the better. The more spices I add, the more flavor we'll get as a result. In this episode of Good Together, I chat with Ethan Frisch, the co-founder of Burlap and Barrel, a company that sources unique and seriously delicious spices for professional chefs and home cooks from farmers around the world. Listen in to learn how to find the most ethically sourced spices for your pantry and upgrade your cooking skills. Hi everyone, welcome to the new episode of Good Together. I am today without Laura, but I'm very excited about today's topic. And the topic is, of course, where do your spices come from? You probably have heard Laura and I talk about our love for cooking many a time on the podcast. And just last episode, we were laughing about my particular love for garlic and all things spices. And of course, the pandemic has definitely kind of inspired everyone to cook more, right? In the kitchen, in the homes. I think we've shared this maybe in one of the episodes, but yeah, a New York Times report in their recent survey that 54% of respondents said that they cook more than before the pandemic, 75% said they have become more confident in the kitchen, and 51% said they will continue to cook more even after the crisis ends. And I think it's great news for everyone because we know when you cook at home, you actually end up eating healthier. And today, that's why I was so excited to invite Ethan Frisch, CEO and founder of Burlap and Barrel, a company that makes single origin spices, which is super, super unique and flavorful. And I think it's perfect timing. We're recording this episode right before Thanksgiving. The episode will go out the week after Thanksgiving, but just in time for you to maybe do some last minute shopping, because I think the spices make amazing gifts. As you heard us on the previous episode, you know, we always support the idea of giving some consumable products instead of products that might someone may or may not enjoy. Anyways, without further ado, Ethan, I would love for you to kind of introduce yourself to our listeners and just give a brief overview of Burlap and Barrel and how you guys started.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to talk to you. My name is Ethan Frisch. I'm the co-founder of Burlap and Barrel. We are a single origin spice company, a public benefit corporation, and we work directly with partner farmers in a dozen different countries, setting them up to export their own crops for the first time, bringing in really high quality, interesting specialty spices into the U.S. In a way that really has not been done before.
Mm-hmm. And how long you guys have started the company, and kind of what was the main inspiration for Burlap and Barrel?
We've been in business about 4 years, and mm-hmm. my co-founder and I had another company, also a social enterprise dealing with food, about 10 years ago. We had an ice cream company, an activist ice cream cart, selling flavors inspired by revolutions, and then donating the profits to a street vendor advocacy group here in New York City. But after that, I had been a chef in restaurants in New York and left kitchens to go to graduate school for international development. I wanted to be an aid worker. So I did that, moved to London for grad school, and then moved to Afghanistan, where I lived for about 2.5 years working for a big nonprofit. And it was really in Afghanistan that I first realized that there were, I mean, this was not rocket science, not a brilliant realization, but it hadn't occurred to me before, that there were really incredible ingredients being grown all around the world by farmers who were exceptional at what they do, had been doing it for a very long time, often for generations, but had no access to the international markets, to the international supply chains to sell their crops at their true value. And when I was, you know, I would come across things while I was in Afghanistan or traveling elsewhere, bring them back to New York to share with my friends in the restaurant industry. And they were just blown away by not just by the quality, but also by the uniqueness. So I realized that there were these two groups of people, chefs, professional chefs and home cooks in the U.S. who really appreciated good spices and had not been able to get them before, and farmers who were growing those spices and had no way to bring them to market other than through the commodity market. And the way the commodity market works, it's based on a colonial model of the spice trade where there are huge exporters in the countries of origin, and the journey from a farm to the exporter can take several years. Spices will change hands a dozen times, at least in that process, where a smallholder farmer will sell to a truck driver who will come, a couple of times a week during the harvest season, or they'll sell to some other local broker or consolidator, somebody with a little warehouse or a storeroom in the back of a shop. It's very, very informal. That person is buying from a dozen or a couple of dozen farmers and then selling on to somebody else who's buying from, likewise a couple of dozen people like them. So you have this funneling effect with a lot of farmers at the top of the funnel and ultimately just a handful of exporters at the bottom. And so by the time the spices get to the export, we're not even talking about the import into the US and how long that process takes. This is just to get it out of the country of origin. Spices can be several years old at that point. They've just been mixed together. So if there is, or I should say when there is a farmer who's growing something really exceptional, because there always is, that person's product, their spices have just been mixed in with everybody else's. And so you as a consumer, as a cook, don't get to taste that exceptional crop. And then the import process is the same thing, sort of an upside down funnel. Spices come in through a few big importers and then get broken down and distributed out to all of the spice brands that you might see in the supermarket. But it's a very inefficient process, and it doesn't work for the farmer, because farmers get paid a fraction of the final value of the thing that they grow, even though they're the ones initiating the supply chain. It doesn't work for the consumer because it takes forever, and ultimately the quality of the spice that you get is pretty low. So really the only people it works for are the middlemen, and that's not the way that supply chains should work anymore, or really ever.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Totally agree with you. So yeah, I had this question planned for later, but I think you kind of started talking a little bit about, I've noticed that on your packaging, you have front and center, and you mentioned single origin spices. I have been seeing this term used in the food industry quite a lot recently, but I never really understood what it is. I think you already I'm starting to understand a bit better from what you just described, but what exactly it means, single origin spice?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, So this is a fairly new idea in the spice trade. I think most people will not have heard about that term applied to spices. You might have heard it applied to other agricultural products, things like coffee or cacao, chocolate.
Olive oil, I think.
Yeah,
I heard
exactly.
Something.
Mm-hmm. Tea. So there are other agricultural supply chains that have talked about single origin before, but really it's very new in the spice trade. And what it means is that the spices come from a specific place, but what the implication of it is, what the sort of the message behind it is, not just that spices came from this one place, but that we as a company have decided, out of all of the places in the world that we could be sourcing our black pepper or our cinnamon, our turmeric, whatever it is, that we've decided to source it from this place because it's so special when it's grown in that environment, in that climate, by a farmer who's using those particular techniques that might be might be local to that area. So just as an example, to go back to the story that I was I started to tell earlier about living in Afghanistan, I was spending a lot of time in the mountains in the northeast of the country in a province called Badakhshan. It's a very rural, pretty remote province. There's not a lot of roads, not a lot of infrastructure in general. It's very mountainous. But there's an incredible variety of wild cumin that grows in those mountains. It's harvested towards the end of the summer. By groups of foragers, mostly women who specialize in harvesting that cumin in particular. And it's very popular within Afghanistan. It's sort of famous as being the best cumin. And if you go to a spice shop in Kabul or somewhere else and ask for the best cumin, they'll tell you, oh, it's the Badakhshani cumin, the cumin from Badakhshan. So there is, even within the country, this understanding. And I think you see this in other crops as well, right? Like, you might buy the best olives in the world from Greece or Italy or Spain. People have those understandings of other crops, and the same is true for spices. So that's what we've done, is decided where we want to source various spices from, because those places grow the most flavorful or the most complex version of those crops. And then we set up supply chains to bring them into the US.
Very interesting. Yeah, because actually, I think, cumin from Afghanistan was one of the first spices that I've noticed. Of course, my husband is Moroccan, and they're also very passionate about their cumin. So I was like, oh, there's cumin from Afghanistan. And it's, I have worked in fair trade for a while with artisans, not farmers, but mostly artisans from around the world. But yeah, Afghanistan, I mean, it's obviously a difficult country in a difficult situation, and I've never seen a product sourced from there. And I know how much more impactful is the fact that you're actually supporting farmers from that country, since they have to deal with a lot and they can use any opportunity that you can give them, essentially. Yeah, let's talk a bit about the public benefit corporation. That's another thing that you guys put front and center. I love that. I've heard this term before, but I don't think it's as kind of known, as well known as benefit corporation, for example, now. So can you tell us a bit more about what exactly public benefit corporation is? I'm assuming it's a legal term, how that works.
Yep, you're absolutely right. It is a legal term, and that's kind of one of the key ways that it's different from the B Corp or the benefit corporation that people may have heard of before, where a B Corp is a third party certification. The public benefit corporation status is a legal corporate status. So in our articles of incorporation, it says we're a public benefit corporation. And what it means is that written into our articles of incorporation is a statement of our public benefit. So it winds up being sort of a hybrid for-profit, nonprofit model where our legal status values profits as it does for any corporation. The legality around corporations values profits over anything else, which is unfortunate, but the world that we live in. But what a public benefit corporation does is it creates a secondary value system. So in addition to profits, it also values your public benefit. And it's up to the individual companies to determine what that is. In our case, it's connecting smallholder farmers with high value markets. But it's legally binding. So, very different from the B Corp status, we could potentially be sued if somebody felt like we weren't upholding our public benefit. So it has teeth to it, which we like, right? Like we want more companies to find that balance between people and profits. It's a fairly new corporate status. There are not a lot of corporations that exist there, and there are really only a handful of states that offer it. We had to incorporate in Delaware because Delaware is one of the few states that does that.
And so when was the first time that this has been introduced, public benefit corporation as a legal status?
It's a great question. I don't know a ton about the history of it, but I think it's fairly recent. I would say in the last 5 years, if not less. We originally, I mean, I think like a lot of entrepreneurs, you go through several stages. So we had originally incorporated as a regular old LLC and then reincorporated about a year and a half later, once we learned about the public benefit corporation, that it even existed. And as soon as we heard about it, it just clicked. That was exactly what we wanted to be doing.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it. And I'm happy kind of that we can introduce our audience to this a new corporation status. We haven't talked about this on the podcast yet. So, well, maybe more exciting stuff. Let's talk about how many countries and different farm groups you're currently working with in sourcing spices from, because I was really, really impressed how many different countries you're working with. It's not even in one continent. It's really anywhere from Asia to Latin America to Africa. So how many of them are there?
Yeah, we work with farmers in 14 different countries at the moment. And as you pointed out, we started in Afghanistan, but Afghanistan is a really challenging place to export from. If you were going to pick the hardest places in the world, the remote
probably it, yes.
Northeastern Afghanistan would definitely be on that list. And what we figured out, or what our theory was early on, was that if we could figure out how to bring cumin from Afghanistan to the U.S., we could probably figure out how to bring other crops from other
absolutely
countries as well. And so that was where we started. But very, very shortly thereafter, I got in touch with a cooperative in Zanzibar, Tanzania, which has an incredible history with the spice trade, but very, very, very minimal exports, especially to the U.S. now. I believe we're the only company importing spices from Zanzibar into the U.S.
Wow.
So we started working with a cooperative there. I think at that point, there were about 20 farmers in the co-op. I think now there's almost 30. And they grow incredible black pepper, cloves, nutmeg, cinnamon. So we started importing from them. And then I connected with a farmer in Guatemala through an NGO that works with farmers in Guatemala, and particularly cardamom farmers. There are thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of cardamom farmers in Guatemala. So I'd gotten in touch with this NGO and said, who's the best? Like, if I'm looking for the best cardamom, who should I talk to? And they said, come down and we'll introduce you to somebody. So I did. I flew down to Guatemala and drove up into the mountains and spent a couple of days with a farmer named Amilcar. This is now going back 4 years. And he and I are still working together. We've become very close friends. And we import his cardamom as well as some chili peppers that he grows and a couple of other things. And then we've just built it out over time. Either deciding what the next spice might be and then doing some research to figure out where we might look for the best version of that spice, or vice versa. You know, farmers get in touch with us on a pretty regular basis to say, I'm growing, you know, for example, somebody reached out recently, her family grows nutmeg in Grenada in the Caribbean. And we just brought in our first shipment from them. So, we've been able to piece together a network of partner farmers who are just incredibly like-minded. They tend to be very passionate. They tend to be very entrepreneurial. They tend to have a lot of strong feelings and ideas about how to grow the thing that they grow. And that's one of the reasons why they grow it so well, is because they care so deeply about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. I think that's another reason why I was so excited about our interview, again, because of my kind of experience with fair trade. We always talk about like our personal sustainability values at Brightly, like kind of what are the core most important things for me. And it's definitely the rights of farmers, of artisans, and making sure that they're paid fair wages, they have dignified job opportunities, and it's so, so important in the countries especially that are struggling in terms of their development. Because actually, both Laura and me, we all have bachelors in international relations, so international development was also my entire background. And you kind of just can't not be passionate about food. I can only imagine how passionate the farmers are who, you know, I'm making this up, but I'm assuming many of your farmers have literally been growing this specific spice for multiple generations. Is that right?
Yeah. In many cases, we get sort of a mix. In the case of spices like cinnamon, cinnamon is tree bark, which a lot of people don't realize. Mm-hmm. Four different species of tree, all in the same genus. Cinnamomum is the genus, with the different species kind of generally correlated with different countries of origin. But the best cinnamon, the most intense, most flavorful cinnamon, is from the bark of trees that are 20 years old or older. And so if you're going to grow a crop that you have to grow for 20 years before you can harvest it, it just is inherently an intergenerational crop. It's something that parents are planting for their kids to harvest. We spent some time with a cinnamon farmer in Vietnam last year who showed us around a plot of land. I mean, it looked like a forest. These were 15 or 17-year-old cinnamon trees. She had just given that plot of land to her daughter as a wedding gift. And it was very, very literally an investment that she had grown over time. She bought seedlings inexpensively 15 years ago and planted them. It becomes a way for wealth to pass down from generation to generation, where she can give this incredible resource, this forest of cinnamon trees, to her daughter so that her daughter can build her own business.
That's awesome. And such a great story. And I absolutely appreciate, you know, you being able to travel there. It's an amazing experience, and kind of you can see in with your own eyes the impact of your work. And that for me personally, it has been incredibly important and amazing. Some of the best experiences of my life was meeting artisans directly. So let's talk about the scale, right? With your scale and the various smallholder farmer partners that you're working across the world, across different 14 countries, how do you make sure that everyone is paid fairly? There's no child labor in the supply chain? And kind of how do you make sure that your internal ethical code is upheld through the entire supply chain? And I'm also curious what your thoughts about fair trade certification. And what I, as far as I understand, you guys are not fair trade certified. And I know some companies have different reasons and thoughts about this. I'm curious what you have to say.
Yeah, those are great questions, and both things that we think about a lot, and especially that first question. As we've grown over the last few years, as we've started to work with new farmers, and especially, I mean, the last six or 9 months, not being able to travel, which is what we were doing a lot of beforehand. So I guess the first answer is what you just mentioned, being able to go and spend time with somebody in person, get to know them, have them get to know you, see the farm, see how they're working. That's always the best way to tell how somebody is approaching it. And we have very specific granular conversations. I mean, the way that we determine our pricing, or I should say the amount that we pay our partner farmers in most cases, mm-hmm. is by sitting down with our partner farmer or a potential partner and saying, okay, here's our website, right? Like this is 2020. You should know what our website looks like and how much we're selling, maybe not your product, but a comparable, like how much are we selling a jar of black pepper for?
Yeah.
And then to deconstruct that price for them, because for a farmer in rural Vietnam or India or wherever it is, selling a jar of black pepper for $7 or $8, which may not feel like a lot to the US, it could, you know, represents a lot of money to them.
Absolutely.
So it's really important for us to contextualize that. Here's how much we pay for the jar. Here's how much we pay for the lid and the labor and the process of packaging it. And this is what our warehouse costs us every month. Mm-hmm. And this is what it's going to cost us to ship your black pepper from the farm all the way to, you know, to our packing facility in upstate New York. Give them a really granular understanding of what our business looks like and what the costs are. And then have that same conversation on their side. You know, what are their costs at the beginning of the season? What mm-hmm. are the inputs? Are they buying seeds? Are they buying fertilizer? Are they hiring seasonal labor to help with the planting or the harvesting? And what happens very reliably, I should say it's a challenging conversation in every case, but it winds up being actually a very good proxy for whether this is someone we are going to want to work with or they're going to want to work with us over the long term. So if they're willing to sit down and have that conversation, that's an amazing sign. And the outcome of the conversation pretty reliably is because we understand each other's businesses, there's a number that emerges in the middle, something that works for them, that covers their costs and gives them a decent margin, and something that works for us that lets us cover our costs and get a decent margin. And that's why we refer to them as partner farmers, right?
Yep.
Like, yes, they are suppliers for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But we see them, and I hope they see us as true partners. We are, you know, we're the sales arm of their agricultural operation. We're not growing the spices ourselves, and they don't have access to the, you know, the home cooks across the U.S. who want to buy their spices. And so we bring very different skills to the table, and they work together really well. So that's the approach.
I have a question. So have you actually visited, or some of your team members visited every single one of the farmer groups you're working with?
So first of all, you say team members, we're a very small team.
Yeah.
It's just myself and my co-founder full time. And we have three part-time employees. But for most of the life of the business, it's just been the two of us. So I have personally visited, if not every single farm, at the very mm-hmm. least, every country that we source from. In the cases that we source from a cooperative or a group of farms, I might visit a couple of the farms. I might not visit all of the farms in the co-op, but obviously enough to get a sense of how they work and the kind of people I'm working with. And I think it's important to mention that we get turned down by farmers, occasionally as well. It's not us coming in and presenting this idea, and every farmer is like, "Yes, of course, I want to do that."
Interesting.
The commodity market is challenging in a lot of ways, but it's also something that farmers know and are familiar with, are comfortable with. Often, you know, it's easy to complain about middlemen in the supply chain. But often either middlemen are providing a service that farmers either can't or don't want to do for themselves. And it's easy to forget that there are relationships there, right? Like a farmer sells to the truck driver who buys their crop. Those two people have been working together potentially for years or generations.
Yeah.
They often live in a community together. So some farmers prefer to stick with the commodity market because it's what they know. And obviously we can't replace those relationships, but we can because of because of the modern communication technology that we all have access to these days, we can develop a similar relationship that acknowledges the importance. I'm in touch, you know, literally today, I've been in touch with our partner farmer in Guatemala. I've been in touch with our partner farmer in Vietnam. That happens all the time. I've talked to a new potential partner farmer in Ethiopia. That's a normal day for me, that I can maintain my personal relationships with our partner farmers around the world without having to live there and be there in person on a very regular basis, as much as I might want to travel and spend more time.
Exactly.
With them. Yeah. I can have a relationship remotely. And that's what's been so important. And that's one of the reasons that some farmers are just either not interested or not a fit, because we have very high standards for the quality of the spices that we carry, and they have to be different, and they have to be single origin, which means that there has to be some indication of the origin in the flavor, right? Like, does this cumin from Afghanistan taste different from cumin from Morocco? It may not be better necessarily, but it tastes different, and that's what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, the best relationships are the ones where we show up on the farm and the farmer goes, "What the hell took you so long? I had this idea years ago, and I just haven't found an import partner to work with. I haven't found somebody to manage the other end of the supply chain." That doesn't happen all the time, but it happens occasionally where a farmer will go, "Look, you know, I had this idea myself." And those are always the best relationships.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Yeah, I haven't been able to travel in my previous work as much as I wish. And we worked with artisans probably with 50 different countries. But I always found that, you know, it's so important to literally go and travel there and meet the farmer in person and shake their hands. It's just, you know, it's maybe like old fashioned, but it does make such a huge difference in terms of how a relationship will kind of work out in the end, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And so, yeah, so important. Let's talk about fair trade certification. What are your thoughts on this? Is it, Alex, I obviously know quite a bit about fair trade certifications and stuff. How does it work in the with spices, with commodities? Obviously, everybody knows, fair trade certified chocolate and cocoa. But what about spices? I actually have never, well, no, I have seen some fair trade certified spices. Anyways, just want to know your thoughts on this. This episode is brought to you by Sheets and Giggles, a company with a punny name but a seriously sustainable mission to make better bedding for everyone. We started partnering with Sheets and Giggles earlier this year, and the positive reviews from our community keep coming in.
I've been on a hunt for sustainable bedding for a long time now, until Brightly actually recommended Sheets and Giggles. I would highly recommend. The material is great. I personally tend to get hot at night and my boyfriend tends to get cold. So it definitely serves as a happy medium. Highly recommend.
I also get hot at night, and I found that after sleeping with Sheets and Giggles moisture wicking sheets over the past few months, I can't remember the last time I woke up overheated.
I love my Sheets and Giggles sheets. They're my absolute favorite. Not only because they're super duper soft, but they are sustainably and ethically made out of eucalyptus.
Yep, I love that our scout Ashley called out how soft the Sheets and Giggles sheets are. Plus, the eucalyptus that is in their 400 thread count sheets is grown without insecticides or pesticides. They also just launched a bunch of new colors, and I can't choose between navy blue and red. Help me!
Sheets and Giggles bedding is super lightweight and soft, and they really nail it on zero waste packaging.
We recommend Sheets and Giggles for the softest, most sustainable sleep out there. Good Together listeners get 15% off at checkout by using the code BRIGHTLYECO at sheetsgiggles.com.
If you've been listening to our podcast for a while, you must have heard us gush about Nisolo before. They are the makers of the most gorgeous and ethical shoes that somehow hit the perfect mix of style, comfort, function, and sustainability. Nisolo is a certified B Corp and offsets 100% of their carbon emissions.
My favorite part about Knee Solo is the quality and the style of their shoes. I own quite a few Knee Solo pairs, and they just get better with time. Their designs are classic, timeless, and I can pair my Knee Solos with almost anything in my wardrobe. They last forever, too. I've taken a few pairs to the cobbler to get resold, and they come out looking as good as new every time. I'm also a big fan of companies that take care of their artisan partners and work to ensure above fair trade wages and safe and healthy working conditions for all. Knee Solo goes above and beyond.
I also appreciate how much thought Knee Solo puts into making sure that their shoes will last your lifetime, well, almost, by sharing product care information and even video tutorials on their website. Making sure that whatever product you buy will last you as long as possible is one of the most sustainable things we can do as consumers. I myself have their mules and summer sandals for over 3 years. I just got my husband the Mateo all-weather boot, and he's been wearing them ever since we've opened the box, for real. Oh, and before I forget, they have socks now. They will make perfect stocking stuffers.
Go to nisolo.com/brightly and use the code brightly for 20% off any styles. That's nisolo.com/brightly. Studies have shown that greening your financial assets, like your savings account, is 27 times more impactful in terms of your personal carbon footprint versus things like eating less meat, using public transportation, and even shopping more ethically. This is because most banks choose to invest their money in fossil fuel-powered industries, and conscious finance makes sure to support greener alternatives.
When I first heard this statistic, my jaw dropped. That's why we're really proud to partner with Aspiration. They've created an ethical financial account for spending and saving that helps you turn every single transaction into a positive action. I actually just activated my Aspiration card today. I love that they're B Corp certified and 1% for the Planet member. And they plant a tree for every Roundup transaction. You can also get $100 when you spend $1,000 in the first 60 days of account opening.
By transitioning from your current bank to Aspiration, you're making a difference with every purchase. Head to aspiration.com/brightly to learn more about socially conscious finance and sign up for a new cash management account. I know that I'm not alone when I say I've been doing more cleaning than ever before lately. My family and I are eating almost every meal at home, and my stay-at-home wardrobe is getting a ton of love, which equals a ton of laundry. It's hard to find eco-friendly cleaning products that actually work, so I was excited when our community recommended Drops as a plastic-free, planet-based cleaning solution.
I got the chance to try Drops this weekend, and I tried their eco-friendly wool dry balls as well. They're super soft and work really well. I have just washed my rug and used the dryer balls to shorten the drying time. Drops is actually most known for their laundry and dishwasher pods. They have over 10,000 five-star reviews. And one thing we like to do at Good Together and Brightly is recommend affordable and effective alternatives to big box brands. Drops pods average a cost of 19 cents per load, which is actually cheaper than conventional brands.
I feel like I'm always running the dishwasher, which is actually more eco-friendly and effective than hand washing. Did you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, Drops plant and mineral-based dishwasher pods were super effective at getting all of the crud off of my dishes. And I was really impressed with the low-waste packaging that they utilize instead of plastic containers that end up in our oceans and landfills. Plus, they offer free carbon-neutral shipping with every order. Go to drops.com/brightly and use code BRIGHTLY for 25% off your first order. That's drops.com/brightly.
Yeah, first of all, you're absolutely right. It's actually quite difficult to find fair trade certified spices. There has not been the same kind of movement in fair trade for spices that there has been for cacao and tea and other agricultural crops. So that's one thing, is it is quite difficult to find fair trade certified farms or farmers. And then I do have some philosophical disagreements with the fair trade approach. One being, and forgive me if I'm mixing up the terms, but in a fair trade model, there's a price that's set as the fair trade price for that crop. And a percentage of that price is allocated towards a community fund. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, it's kind of like a bonus. Fair trade premium. That's what they call it.
Exactly. So one disagreement that we have with that model is rather than setting that up as a community fund where somebody else gets to make the decision, we would rather put that money directly into the hands of our partner farmers. They live their lives. They know the best way to spend any extra money that they might be making, and whether that's investing it in their business or paying for family expense, whatever it is, it's their decision, and we don't want to. It's not our place to tell them how to spend that money.
Yep, absolutely.
And in many cases, we pay quite a bit more than the fair trade price. I mean, in the case of, I just know this one, I happen to know this one off the top of my head, but turmeric, the fair trade price per kilo for turmeric in India is $1 a kilo, maybe a little less, 90 something cents a kilo. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, a kilo is, it's a decent quantity. It's a 2.25 pounds basically. Yep. So if you're filling jars, it's a couple of dozen jars for $1. That's the fair trade price. The commodity price for turmeric is even lower. It's somewhere in the 60 cents a kilo range.
Uh-huh.
We pay about $6 a kilo.
Wow.
So we're paying six times the commodity price. I'm sorry, six times the fair trade price and almost, 10 times the commodity price. So mm-hmm. by moving away from fair trade, we're able to pay farmers more and associate that value with a higher quality product, because we pay $6 a kilo because the turmeric is absolutely exceptional. And because of the work that he does to grow it in that way is worth every penny of that. Mm-hmm. And so being able to do that, having the flexibility to do that, and obviously then being able to work with farmers who are not fair trade certified. But then the other element of it that I find even more problematic is that because, and I think we've seen this with a lot of the certifications, the third party certifications, mm-hmm. because the requirements are very specifically laid out, I think this was not the intention when these regulations were created.
Yep.
But the result has been that big companies, Unilever and Nestle and big companies, can come in, build their own plantation that checks all of the boxes for fair trade, even though it's sort of against the spirit of what fair trade is trying to do. They can build their own large-scale plantation-style agriculture that meets the requirements of fair trade and at the same time undercuts the work that smallholder farmers are doing. And that's bad. I mean, it's the wrong, that's not how it should be working. And so I'm hesitant to, I would want some pretty significant overhauls in the system.
We're big supporters of fair trade, but I've always been very much aware through my own personal research, because again, we were both in international development, that there are some problems. It's not like a perfect silver bullet solution. And I'm also guessing that, again, fair trade puts restrictions. And for you, I think you first, you're focusing on the quality, right? You're literally looking for the best spices, and you don't want to be restricted by only working with fair trade certified quote unquote farms. If you can, yourself, you almost establish a better system without the certification. So I love that. Yeah. And thank you for explaining this for sure.
But, I mean, I do think obviously the work that has been done around building education around fair trade, it has been so important and really has laid the groundwork for us to be able to do what we're mm-hmm. doing, because people have learned that there are good supply chains and bad supply chains. I mean, that reality is hugely problematic, that you can go into a supermarket and buy something without realizing that the people involved in the, whether it was the growing or the manufacturing or the packaging, or whatever it was, the people involved in creating that product that you just bought, were underpaid, were possibly abused, were working under really suboptimal conditions. That shouldn't exist at all, but that's the reality that we live in. And so the necessity for a system like fair trade and the work that various fair trade related organizations have done to just make people aware of that reality and present alternatives has been critically important. But I think we're ready for a little bit of an upgrade.
Yep, absolutely. I can't agree more with that. So yeah, let's talk about some of my favorite part of the discussion is what do we as consumers should be looking for when shopping for, on one side, for best quality spices, and on the other side, for most ethically sourced spices.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like two questions in one.
Luckily, it's sort of the same answer. And
that's great.
This has been, it was a surprising thing that we learned early on, but something that has really enabled the business to grow is that often the farmers who are growing things the right way, growing organically, growing regeneratively, paying their seasonal labor or the workers on the farm fair wages, the farmers who are thinking about those questions in every case have also thought about quality and speciality. They tend to be the people who are growing heirloom varieties because they want to preserve those varieties. They're growing organically, not just because they think it's the right thing to do, but because the flavor of the crops that they grow is better. So they see a very clear connection. And I think a lot of people here in the US that, you know, distant from the origin of a lot of the supply chains that grow our food, we often don't realize that those two things go hand in hand. But in my experience, they very much do. The answer is buy spices from companies that can tell you where they came from, mm-hmm. that can tell you the origin, that can tell you ideally the date or, you know, when they were harvested, the season, mm-hmm. the month, something like that, who can tell you the country of origin or even ideally a specific place within that country. If you go to the supermarket and you buy black pepper from one of the big companies, and you look at the back, it may not have a country of origin at all, or it will say Vietnam, India, Brazil, Indonesia, because they don't know which one it came from, mm-hmm. because they're getting so much from so many places, they can't trace their supply chains back, even to a specific country, let alone to a specific farm. So buy spices from companies that can give you that information, that know and are willing to share where their spices come from and who grew them.
That's great. Yeah, we always encourage our listeners to always kind of do their own research, check the websites. Obviously, I think certification, one of the beauty of certification is that, you know, it's an easy way for us. Okay, this is a better product, or at least I know they met some kind of minimum requirements to be, for example, fair trade certified or organic. And that's an easy way for us as consumers to quickly know, okay, I know that's it's kind of approved by a third-party organization. But another thing you can do as a consumer is, again, do your own research, check the website, and look for transparency, as much transparency as possible. And that's kind of exactly what you're providing, which is great. All right, so let's talk about even more fun stuff. I know you have a kind of thriving Facebook community where everyone, all of your customers are sharing their favorite recipes with each other. And I was curious if you have your favorite spices and maybe some favorite recipes of yours, or maybe like most unique and original recipes that you've come across.
Absolutely. Just a quick note on the Facebook group. It really has grown in ways that we didn't expect, but it turns out there are a lot of people who care about where their food comes from,
yeah.
and who hadn't thought about where their spices were coming from. And then they came across our company in one way or another. And so we have this community on Facebook that I should mention is not only our customers, but also many of our partner farmers who are on Facebook are also in the group.
Oh, that's so great.
It gets back to this other sort of idea that as cooks in the US, we often don't know very much about where our spices come from, or we didn't historically. But the same is true for farmers. Farmers grow, they sell to the truck driver, and that's the end of the story for them. They don't know where their spices go. Often they don't know what country they're being shipped to. They don't know how they're being used in that destination country, because in a lot of cases, spices are grown as cash crops. So the farmer who grows them, you know, in many cases they do cook with the spice, but in many cases they don't. They grow it as a cash crop and they export it. I mentioned earlier cardamom from Guatemala. Guatemala produces something like 70% of the world's cardamom and consumes none of it. It's all exported. So you go talk to cardamom farmers in Guatemala, you say, what do you think of the flavor of this cardamom? And they go, I have no idea. I've never eaten it. And our partner farmer is one of the very few people who loves the taste, one of the very few Guatemalan cardamom farmers who I've met, at least, who loves the taste of cardamom. And I think that makes all the difference. That's one of the reasons why he's so good at it. So, but just being able to create that feedback loop, to be able to send a farmer a picture of a dish that a chef has cooked with their spice, to introduce them on in our Facebook group to the cooks, the home cooks who are using the spices that they grew, and for us as a company to have that entire supply chain from the cook, right? I should say from the farmer to the cook, right? Like we know the person who grows it, we know the person who eats it. There's nobody in the middle, and so that's been really special to see. In terms of recipes, obviously there are a million ways to cook with spices.
Yeah.
If people are sort of just getting started or want to experiment a little more, what I always recommend is pick a spice and pick a dish that you've cooked before, a recipe that you already know pretty well, and add that spice to that recipe. Because that's the easiest way that I've found to really understand how that particular spice is going to change the flavor of a finished dish. So, you know, if you like making pasta and tomato sauce, or you add some cardamom to the tomato sauce, or add some cinnamon to the tomato sauce, add a little, you know, we have a couple of really interesting chilies from Turkey, add some black urfa chili to the tomato sauce. And you really see how the flavors of that spice come out. And then you can do more research. You pick the spices that you like, or the flavors that appeal to you. And then, you know, you look up some recipes online, you pick up a couple of a cookbook or two that focuses on those flavors or that region of the world, and you go from there. And then once you find a couple of spices that you like, you will find other spices. We have a whole system on our website for sort of matching up spices. So if you like cardamom, we will recommend a couple of other spices that you might also like or that go well with cardamom. And so we hope that makes it easier for people to cook more, you know, just a little more freely. You don't have to learn a whole new cuisine. If you want to incorporate turmeric into your cooking, doesn't mean you have to become a master of Indian cuisine. You can, and maybe you should, but you don't have to. You can just find ways to incorporate turmeric, and maybe that leads you down a path to learn more about Indian cooking over time, but you don't have to start with a mastery.
I love it. I love this advice. Yeah, kind of starting with something that you already know and just adding this different spice, and like this, by doing this, figuring out like what kind of flavor this specific spice is adding. It's almost like a math equation.
Exactly. Change one variable and see what the outcome is. Yeah,
love it. I'm definitely looking forward to using the black earth chili that I got from you in a chili, because I keep trying to do chili. I love making chilies. As soon as it's cold outside, it's the first thing I make. But I've recently been not super satisfied how it comes out. So I hope that Earth Chili will help it out for me. Well, okay, so we're coming to the end of our episode, and we always like to ask our guests a few questions. So the first one is, we always ask everyone, our community, that's what we do, please share with us one or two actionable tips on living ethically. And this, of course, can do either with spices and cooking or completely nothing with spices and cooking.
Well, I have lots of tips. I mean, one tip, and I mean, this makes my wife crazy. When we go to the supermarket, she basically refuses to go to the supermarket with me anymore, because I read every label and I try to, you know, like do as much work as I can at the supermarket to understand where something has come from. I can't get it out of my head. You know, I eat a piece of bread and I'm thinking about the farmer who grew the wheat and the company that ground it down. And so that would be my first tip, is just think more about where your food is coming from, the people involved in the supply chains, the systems, it's such a crazy world, both because of its complexity, but also about how little most consumers know about how their food is made or where it comes from.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know, obviously we all eat every day. We all go to the market once or twice a week. It's a very regular part of everybody's lives, but not something that most people think about a lot. And so that would be my primary tip, is just think about where your food is coming from. And then in terms of spices, obviously, I gotta have a spice tip. So really just cook with more spices. I mean, we get a lot of questions about the best ways to store spices. Mm-hmm. And what I always tell people is don't worry about it too much. Just put the spices out in a place where you'll see them. That's how when I'm trying to learn about a new spice or cook with a new spice that I don't have a lot of experience with, it lives on my counter. It lives next to the stove so that I can see it every single time I go to cook. And I find that it just makes it so much easier to incorporate into my day-to-day cooking when I'm reminded that it's there, and reminded that I want to experiment more with it.
That's a great tip. I love it. So next question I have is, of course, we are right in the midst of the holiday season. So tell us maybe a few things that you're gifting to friends and family this year.
Oh, great question. I've been so focused on helping other people get their gifts.
Exactly.
That I have to say, I haven't thought a lot about gifts from my own friends and family. It's been a crazy year for us as a small online business. We used to supply a lot of restaurants, which unfortunately have mostly either temporarily or permanently closed over the last 9 months. We've been very lucky to have an e-commerce presence, something that we had always had, but was a much smaller percentage of the business. And now it's almost everything. And so we've been really scrambling to make people's gifting experiences as positive as possible in a year when a lot of people have had a pretty tough time. And so we redesigned our gift boxes this year, and we've redesigned the way that they get packed, and we have added some new sort of freebie things. We're giving out kitchen towels, and we're doing things like that just to do whatever we can as a small business to both to thank our customers for the support that they've shown over the last since February, because we wouldn't be here. We really wouldn't be here without our direct consumer customers. But also to acknowledge that it's been a hard year for everybody and do whatever little bit we can to make it a little better.
Yeah, well, since you don't want to give a direct shout out to yourself, I will be definitely gifting your guys' spices. Everybody knows that I'm obsessed with spices. Just from the experience, and of course, I get the extra special perk of talking to the founder. Once I become a fan of the company, everybody knows that. So yeah, I think you guys have a great business, and it will make an absolutely perfect gift for everyone, and especially the gift cards. An idea, you guys have gift cards, right?
Yep, we have gift cards. Yeah. We're also about to launch a gift voucher, essentially, so that even if you can't get it shipped to the recipient by Christmas or whatever the date is that you might want to get it there, we're about to have a card ready that you can print out or email to somebody and say, your gift is on your way. Here's a special note. Just so there's something to acknowledge that a gift is coming, because shipping this year is going to be crazy.
Of course, yes. We've talked about this. Definitely do your shopping now. Don't wait even until Black Friday. So this year will be crazy, as we know. So last question, and one of my favorites. What excites you the most about the ethical and sustainable movement right now? And again, can it be spices, food, or just like in general, the sustainability movement, which is having quite a moment this year.
Yeah, it's the movement. It's the people. The people I've met, the conversations, the work that's being done from all aspects of the sustainability and supply chains, from packaging to ready to eat food, baked goods, pickle, people who are making prepared foods, all the way back to companies like ours that are working on supply chain traceability, our network of partner farmers who are as committed to it as we are, or in some cases maybe even more committed. They've been doing it for longer, for sure. I have this dream that someday we'll have a global spice farmers conference and put them all in a room together, because they would all get along so well. Like, they all have such— they're all so passionate.
Same
they're
passion.
All so knowledgeable. Yeah. Often they have very similar personalities, right? Like, very entrepreneurial, very knowledgeable. And even if they're from different countries, they don't speak the same language, they might be different ages, different genders, their backgrounds might be totally different. They share this common passion and deep knowledge. And so we've been able to facilitate that a little bit, taking pictures of the tools that one farmer is using, sending them to another farmer who might be able
to
benefit
awesome.
From those.
That's great.
In some cases, we have been able to put them in touch with each other when there's a language in common or something like that. But to do that on a more formal basis would be amazing. And so that, to answer your question, it's the people and the global network of people and the work that everybody is doing in all kinds of ways to move that conversation forward.
That's great. I love this. It's definitely all about the people. So I think this is a perfect time, a perfect spot to end our conversation. It's been fascinating. I love it. I love what you guys are doing. I do recommend everyone to go check out Burlap and Barrel. Sorry.
Yeah, burlapandbarrel.com.
Yeah, exactly.
Or we're Burlap and Barrel on Instagram.
Yep, there you guys have amazing Instagram. The Facebook community is super fun. Again, good luck with everything this crazy year, and I'm looking forward to seeing you guys succeed and scale even more.
Thanks. And if anybody wants, if anybody's buying gifts and wants to add some of our new kitchen towels, just DM me on Instagram, and I'll send you the code, or I'll set it up on your order.
That's awesome. Yeah, thank you so much, Ethan.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Good Together. As always, you can get show notes and explore lots more content related to all things eco-friendly living by checking out brightly.eco/podcast.
And don't forget to join in on the conversation that's happening on our Facebook group. Simply search Good Together Ethical Shopping and it'll come up. You can also leave us a question through voicemail. The link is on brightly.eco/podcast.
If you're into social media, give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, and all of the channels. Our username is brightly.eco.
Finally, we want to leave you with a reminder. Every day is a chance for you to create change, and you're already covered for today since you joined us here on the podcast. Stay kind and live brightly.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.